So good afternoon, everybody. I would like first to thanks a lot the organizing committee for giving me the opportunity to talk today and discuss the properties of convection in massive stars. In particular, I'll discuss near-surface convection in hot massive stars and try to answer the question about what's going on at the surface of hot massive stars. So I know it's been a long day. We're all a bit tired. We had great talks so far, but stay with me because so far nobody discussed the most interesting stars, I think. So, massive stars are very interesting. In fact, these are the stars that populate the upper part of the HR diagram. These are the stars that like to party. These stars are always, most of the time, found in binary systems. They like to interact in binary system. They, compared to their lower mass counterparts, they live fast, they die young, and when they die, when they go, they do it with fireworks. So they're a lot of fun, but even if they're so much fun, we don't understand yet much about these stars. And we really hope that the situation is going to improve with the help of astroseismology. And I think that's a big interest for me to be at this meeting, even if I'm not an expert in astroseismology, because I hope that this is the way to go to learn more about the stars. So a brief outline of what we're going to discuss today. We're going to discuss convection and the structure of hot massive stars. In particular, I'm going to discuss about a convective region which develops close to the surface of these stars. And I will show you that there are important consequences arising from the presence of this convective layer, which are of fundamental importance for astroseismology. In particular, surface turbulence, solar-like oscillations, and the presence of surface magnetic fields, which I will show it's possibly giving rise to spots at the stellar surface of massive stars. So, what about convection? A little stellar structure 101. Of course, you all know that in the case of low-mass stars, for example, in the case of the Sun, we have a reddish core and a convective envelope. The situation changes if we go to a more massive star. In fact, due to the steeper dependency on temperature of the CNO cycle, we end up with a convective core and a mostly reddish envelope. This is fine in terms of checking out the stellar evolution of the star, because most of the mass in this layer is actually relative, it's true. But the reality is that we also have, for high enough luminosity, the appearance of a convective layer very close to the surface. Where is this layer coming from? Well, it's coming from a peak in the opacity, which is due to ion group elements, which for high enough luminosity can trigger convection close to the surface of massive stars. What I'm showing you here is a run of the opacity in a model of a 20 solar mass star, going from the core, where the plasma is basically fully ionized and only electron scattering is contributing to the opacity, toward the outer layers at lower temperatures up to the surface. And you see that going through recombination, the opacity increased and found a bump, which, as I said, is due to the ion group elements, which is driving convection. Of course, being due to ion group elements, this is strongly metallicity dependent. And you can see it here, this is calculated for different models using the opal opacity tables for different metallicities. And this peak basically disappears, which means that also the convective layers I will discuss during this talk will be strongly metallicity dependent, which also means that all the effects we will discuss are going to be strongly metallicity dependent. Let's keep this in mind. And let's look at the sort of a Kippenham diagram from the zero-age main sequence to the end of hydrogen curve burning for a 20 solar mass model at solar metallicity. You can see that if you're looking down in one solar radius from the surface of the star, basically the star in this case is much more extended, we're just looking at the upper layer, we see this convection zone which is developing and evolving in radius coordinate. In terms of mass, this doesn't contain mass, basically, but it's, in terms of radius, is important, and it's very close to the surface. So the idea is, can it be that this convective region can have an influence for the stellar properties of the star? And of course, a picture is worth a thousand words, that's why I put this in. Here we have a layer with turbulent convection, which is giving rise to perturbation under the form of waves, both acoustic and gravity waves, which will then propagate in this relative layer, steepen due to the fact that the density is decreasing, and reach the surface where they might give rise to density and velocity fluctuations. Not only the occurrence of turbulent convection in certain cases, depending on the properties of the plasma flow, can give rise to dynamo action, which means that a magnetic field can be produced and can survive the ohmic dissipation. And again, basically, in case buoyancy is possible, can rise to the surface and also appear. We know that that happens in the sun, for example. So let's dig a bit more into this problem of possibility of triggering surface turbulence. As I said, a picture is worth a thousand words, but there is one thing which is better than picture. What is it? That's a movie. And so this is a simulation of a 3D hydro simulation of a turbulent convection layer in a Cartesian box with a stratified atmosphere on top, which is relative. I don't want to go into too many details because these are preliminary. What I want you to take from this movie is that the presence of turbulent convection give rise to waves, okay? And this can propagate. This box is stratified in density, and what I'm showing here is the vertical component of the velocity. And you can see this nice G-modes propagating upward and reaching the surface. And what I want you to see is that while this layer is radiative, and this is convective, and you can see it here, this is a cut of the velocity field inside the convection layer. Also, on top of the box, we have fluctuations in velocities. We propagated energy from this region up to here. Now, is there a way to measure turbulence at the surface of massive stars? Yes, there is. And it's been done for decades by spectroscopists. People doing fitting of stellar spectra have to use a parameter which is called microturbulence to fit the broadening of these lines. This microturbulence is in fact the additional broadening coming from non-thermal motions which vary on a small scale compared to the line-forming region in the region of line formation, as I said. This has been used for decades, as I said, for fitting the stellar spectra. Has been only used as a fudge factor, but recently a correlation between this near-surface convection and microturbulence has been found. The idea is that we can take the amount of energy that can go into these waves, depending on the properties of convection, and check, given, for example, stellar evolution calculation in 1D, if the energy produced by these convective regions can excite at the surface a velocity field compatible with the observed microturbulent field. So what we did is very simple here. There's no 3D hydro here. This is 1D mixing length approximation. So we take the upper layer of the convection zone. We measure the energy which is associated with the convective velocities, okay, which is Eg in this case. We know that the maximum of the energy is going into G modes with a rate which is dependent on the convective Mach number in that region. So the rho C VC square MC is giving us the energy into G modes. And then we compare it to a turbulent energy which is associated with a velocity field of 10 km per second. We fix that at the surface. So what we're asking here, checking this ratio, is can convection on this in this region of the HR diagram trigger a velocity field of 10 km per second at the surface? And inside this region, the answer is yes, outside is no. And then we compare this with observation of microturbulence coming from VLT Flames collaboration, which has measured in a systematic and homogeneous way microturbulent velocity at the surface of B stars. And you can see that the sample of stars with turbulence, microturbulence in excess of 10 km per second and less than 10 is almost perfectly divided by the line, which is theoretical. As I said, this is dependent also on the Middle East, and we also check that. And you can see that going to lower Middle East, of course, the region influenced by convection is closing toward moving to higher luminosity. Of course, you need higher luminosity to trigger the same amount of convection. And the sample of the observed data, even if in this case the sample is smaller, it seems still to be consistent with the properties obtained by the simulations, the 1D simulations. Let me discuss about solar-like oscillations. The idea is that this is the region influenced by the presence of subsurface convection. This is the ion convection zone, and when we saw this, we thought, okay, this is interesting because maybe, even in these stars, this can be a possibility to excite solar-like oscillation even in massive stars. So we tentatively suggested this, and this idea was backed up almost straight away, I think, independently, I guess, by Kevin Belkacem et al., which not only made much better, of course, they did the theoretical calculation of the excited modes by subsurface convection, but they also claim to have found this solar-like oscillation in a B star. Now, recently, this claim could not be confirmed by the work of Connie and collaborators, but Peter de Groot and collaborators found a solar-like oscillation in an O-type star last year. And I want to show you here the short-time Fourier transform of the data. And you can see here what's important for this star is the clear signature of frequency spacing and the short lifetime of the modes, which is typical of stochastically excited pulsation. And for reference, this is the location of this object on the HR diagram. Red noise. Corot, the group, Ronnie Blom and collaborators using Corot data checked out photometric variability in other three O-type stars. Interestingly, they didn't find any pulsation. What they found is variability of stochastic nature. And this kind of variability is compatible, or at least it's possibly driven by, they suggest, the presence of subsurface convection. Again, these are the location of these stars in the HR diagram. Now, as I told you, another possibility, another possible effect due to the presence of these convective layers is the emergence of magnetic fields. A little introduction about this topic. Massive stars have been found to present magnetic fields in at least a dozen, or maybe more now, OB stars. The detection is coming from the spectral signature, which is left by the Zeeman effect. And this has a strong bias toward large-scale, large-amplitude fields. The origin of this kind of fields is unclear, but probably is of fossil origin, meaning that the fields are inherited by the during the formation process of the star. And of course, these have important evolutionary consequences, for example, for the rotational spin-down, and maybe even for mixing. These are not the fields I'm going to talk about now. The idea is that OB stars show a lot of puzzling surface phenomena, and some of these phenomena are ubiquitous, meaning basically are everywhere you look for them in the HR diagram, in the upper region of the HR diagram. Therefore, cannot be explained by large-scale fields. Maybe then, small-scale fields of small amplitude and maybe a small coherent scale are ubiquitous and are present in all these stars. Where they're from in that case? Well, they could come from dynamo action in the turbulent convection region. And again, this is a preliminary simulation of subsurface convection just to show you that dynamo action is possible in a convective layer, subsurface convection layer, in the presence, for example, of rotation and shear. You can see here the magnetic field, which is growing and reaching the equipartition level in a simulation. Now, if we have dynamo action in this convective layer, what kind of fields we can produce? Well, assuming equipartition, this is the amount of field, the amplitude of the field inside the ion convection zone on the AHR diagram. You can see fields up to 2 kilogauss can be produced. Okay, this is inside the convective region, so it's not at the surface. What about the surface? Well, we have shown that basically magnetic buoyancy can bring fields at the surface in a very short time scale for these stars. And therefore, assuming a simple scaling for the magnetic field amplitude, thanks as function of the density, we can see that we can get fields of order of 10 or up to 100 gauss at the surface of these stars. So we know that in the Sun, the magnetic field emerging is leaving an observational signature in terms of the flux. Where the magnetic field is present, convection is inhibited. But convection is transporting most of the flux in the Sun, which means that at the surface, where the magnetic field is emerging, we'll see the effect as a dark spot. What about a massive star? Massive stars don't have convection up to the surface. They have a relative layer. So the question is, what happened to the surface of the Sun when a magnetic field tread the relative layer? So one can do a very simple study and just use the assumption of a hydrostatic equilibrium and look what would be the pressure inside the magnetic element. Of course, inside the magnetic element, the pressure has two components, one contribution from the gas pressure and one from the magnetic pressure, while outside, it's only gas pressure. If you assume that these two are equal, and you also assume thermal equilibrium, so if the magnetic element is small, then basically what you end up is a decrease in the density. Decrease in the density means that the element is more transparent, which means that if you're looking from above inside this direction, we are looking deeper in the star, because the density is lower. But deeper in the star means hotter, which means brighter. So we came up using very simple assumption that for a magnetic field emerging in a hot, massive star with a relative envelope, we'll get a hot, bright spot. So is this maybe what we're looking at? I don't know. But, yeah. So maybe these spots, or something similar to these, have been observed. Some of the variability which is found in the hot Corot target, hot massive Corot target, cannot be ascribed to any, kind of pulsation. In fact, this star, it's the same star I showed you before, which is also showing solar-like oscillation. This variability actually is not due to solar-like oscillation. Solar-like oscillation are much smaller amplitude. This variability here, it seems to be connected to the rotational period of the star. It's at least compatible with the rotational modulation effect on features at the surface of the star. Exactly, it's not clear what kind of feature, but you see, this kind of cusp-like structure seems to repeat on a period of 10 days or something like that. And this is not the only occurrence. Actually, this is found in another target, another Corot target. And again, you can see here the variability is always 10 to the 3 ppm. And you can see here again this cusp-like structure, which seems to repeat on a similar pattern, which again is compatible with the vicinity of the star. Interestingly, this is repeating for a little while, but then it disappears. So this, whatever this is a short-lived phenomenon at the surface of the star. And remember, these stars have strong winds, so which makes sense that structure at their surface cannot live too long. Again, this is the location of this last star I show you on the HR diagram, and I want to put it back with the other one, which I'll show you so far. So these are the three red noise stars. This is the solar-like oscillation plus spots, whatever. And this is the Papik swarm, so again, spots or, anyway, rotationally modulated structure. And I would like to remind you that theory of pulsation predict pulsation even in the upper part of the HR diagram, but so far these stars are found to not be pulsating. So I think this is very interesting. When I saw these, it was my first impression was, okay, this is interesting because those stars should pulsate, but they're not. So what's going on in this region of the HR diagram? And I think this is an hint to the fact that maybe wind Maslow's is playing an important role in damping maybe the oscillation in these stars. We don't know, but for that I will refer to the talks from Stan and Melanie, which are going to talk a little more about the effect of wind Maslow's. So just to recap a bit, the effect of the ion convection zone, the near surface convection in massive stars, are multiple. We have running waves, which we think are connected to the presence of turbulence at the surface of massive stars. Standing waves, so stochastically excited waves by the presence of turbulent convection, which give rise to solar-like oscillations. And magnetic fields, which might give rise to photometric variability. And, you know, maybe the observations which are being gathered by Corot are kind of compatible with this picture. I don't know. Seems this is something we should investigate further. So there should be more observation coming up from Corot. And I think the upper region of the HR diagram, it's worth studying because we can answer a lot of questions in that region. So just to leave you with the take-home messages. What I would like you to remember of this talk is that, okay, the envelope of early type stars is not fully radiative. There is a convection region there. Surface turbulence is probably induced by near surface convection. And the photometric variability, not massive stars, might be compatible with effects coming from the ion convection zone. And finally, that massive stars might have bright magnetic spots at their surface. And I'd like to conclude here. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Questions? Me? Okay, I have two questions actually. The first one is concerning the helium convection zone that you haven't talked about at all. It's close to the surface, so maybe this is the source of the turbulence on the surface. Can you comment on that?
Yes. I didn't discuss that, I didn't have enough time, but the reason why we neglect completely that region, that convective region, which you're right, is present, is, there are two good reasons. The first one is that that region might not be even convective at all. If you, it's convective in the stellar evolution calculations, but if you check the Rayleigh number in that region, that's depending on the value of the viscosity you use, because viscosity is very high due to the fact that that region is very close to the surface, it ends up that in some calculation that region is not even convective. First. Second, the amount of convective flux, even in the models, the mixing length theory models, is very, very, very tiny. It's like extremely small. The convective velocity are extremely small. And third, most importantly, for these stars, that region contains so much mass, so little mass, and it's so close to the surface that basically during the turnover time, the wind Maslow's is removing completely the region. So basically that region cannot ever become convective at all. Okay? So there are a few good reasons for not to.
Okay, now question number two. In one of your pictures, simulations of convection, I have found in description the number that the ratio between convective and radiative flux is 0.3.
Yes.
So that means that convection is carrying about 23% of total flux.
Yes.
How much is it in real stars? I remember numbers which are much lower than that.
Depending on the models, for example, if I remember correctly, for a 60 solar mass model, we have 95% of flux in radiation and 5% in convection. Yeah, the problem is it's very hard to get to those values in the simulation.
Yeah, but for 12 solar mass, I remember about 1.5% carried by convection using mixing length theory. So this is order of magnitude less than you assumed in your simulation.
As I said, these are preliminary calculations, and I'm just using as to show you the occurrence of. I never used the results from the simulation in my quantitative plots. It was just a toy model. You're right, completely right. It's very hard to simulate properly those regions and we're getting there, but it will take a while.
Yeah, so thanks, Matteo, for this very nice summary. So I guess I'll discuss this when I give my talk on Thursday, but one of the things I think it was worth emphasizing here is that, as you pointed out, all these stars, whereas the magnetic, I should also comment that the strong magnetic fields are now detected in about three dozen OB stars. It's only about a half dozen O stars, but there are lots and lots of B stars. So it's not a completely, you know, unheard of phenomenon, but it's still a small percentage of stars. On the other hand, the discrete absorption components are ubiquitous. You know, in surveys that were done, you just see them all the time. Every O star, if you look carefully enough, their ultraviolet lines and the wind lines, they showed this discrete absorption features. And they're quasi-periodic. They don't show a regular periodicity the way the strong magnetic stars show a very clear clock-right periodicity. But one of the things they do show is these very dark absorptions that move through the lines very slowly. And what Cramer and I found in the mid-90s was the easiest way to explain that was to have bright spots on the surface which would overdrive too much mass, and then as you moved away from the spot, the wind would be overdense and it would slow down, and you'd get this sort of plateau in velocity which would then absorb lots of photons. So the idea now that you're predicting these kinds of magnetic stars, the magnetic effects could give rise to little bright spots, is really very nice, and I really am looking forward to hearing more about the Corot and the Kepler observations, because I've been saying for many years, if we want to understand DACs, we should really look at photometric variability, because it's the easiest way to make a radiation-driven wind show structural variability, is have the photon, the light actually change.
Right. I totally agree with that, and if I could follow up on that, I think that, of course, these simulations are very nice, and you know this follow from the previous question as well, but it's very difficult to simulate exactly what's going on. I will use these as toy models, and then honestly, I will turn to the observations. So these are kind of observations are very useful because, you know, maybe now what's really needed to do is do like multi-wavelength campaign at the same time. So well, we can correlate, for example, the photometric variability with, for example, line profile variabilities or phenomena which occur in the wind, and then we can connect. This has been done, for example, for the ducts between UV and H-alpha, but this has never been done, for example, using this powerful instrument now, and this should be done, I think. And that's probably really the way we can answer these questions. And because, you know, the problem with the bright spots, it's a nice idea, but, you know, I cannot predict how many spots, what kind of brightness, because this is a very complicated problem. It's a global problem. It's difficult because, you know, the dynamo process, we don't even understand the sun. So, you know, it's
Congratulations, Matteo. Following up on that, there are several stars observed by Kuro and analyzed in a future paper, which will soon be out, that contains B8, B9 stars. And I wonder how hard your lower limit is in these plots that you showed, because they really have spots very clearly.
So, okay, this is a very good question. I didn't discuss this. Let me see. So maybe, okay. Well, you're asking how hard is this limit?
Yeah, okay. We are lower than your blue dashed line.
So, yeah, okay. So the thing is that this has been studied. I think that Sylvie referred to a very nice work from Richaud, I think is his name, Richard. So where people have studied the effect of diffusion in this star. So of course, you know, usually I don't care about that because massive stars, you know, they don't do that. You know, they're strong winds, they have short lifetimes. But I guess there might be a gray region where that effect might start playing a role. You know, the lifetime becomes long enough, the mass is small enough that you might have settling and radiation levitation, and that might decrease this line. In fact, in the paper that Sylvie referred to, they found ion convection zone down to 1.5 solar masses, for example. So, yeah, I don't know. This is something one has to investigate, and I haven't done that.
Okay, you talk to Peter during this week.
Okay, I will.
Yeah, hi. Can I ask you, or maybe Connie as well, are there any stars up here which you think do have solar-like oscillations?
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
Do you believe the solar-like oscillations?
In any stars?
In any of these stars?
Yeah, the O star has clear solar-like oscillations. The B star, I have had my doubts.
But this one?
No, that one's clear.
Okay.
Yeah, the other work is the work published by Belkacem on the V1449 Aquilae star, and there they claim this there was this frequency spacing, but I think that in the work of Connie was not possible to reproduce that result. So that's debated. But I think in this case it looks pretty solid. So at least for one case we got that, and it's pretty high in the HR diagram, so we know, you know, this star do it.
The difficulty with this team is that we have a larger amplitude variability that we have to subtract first. And if your result depends on the way you subtract that, then I'm not comfortable with that. And this is not the case for this star. Here, this result stays. While in the B star, the result is dependent on the way you subtract the kappa-driven modes. There aren't any. There's rotational modulation of maybe magnetic origin, and there are solar-like oscillations.
That's it. Other questions?
Do you see rotational splitting?
Well, I cannot answer that.
Oh, a squint Fourier transform might reveal it.
You want me to answer that? The absence of we do see rotational splitting in B stars, but not in all of them, and this is interesting.
Other questions? Okay. Thank our speaker again. Both speakers.